Bonjour, bonjour, and welcome back to Rabbit Flickers of the Crimson Screen. My name is David, and I'm today with Anthony Rossetti. Hello, Anthony.
Hello. Hello, David. How are you?
I am doing good, thank you. It's morning, the sun is shining, and finally the weather seems to be a bit cooler. So we got the autumn fever, you know, it's pretty nice.
Must be nice.
It is. Well, we're at 46 degrees right now, so you can see. So after last week's experience with cats, demon cats, or whatever that was, today we're going to be talking about a movie I've chosen called Un couteau dans le cœur. So if you were to describe that movie in one word, what would you say?
Beautiful.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Because I would have used the same word myself. I would also use a float. But we're going to go back to that. So to explain the movie on its own, Un couteau dans le cœur, it is a 2018 horror thriller directed by Yann Gonzalez. So it's a production between France, Argentina, and Switzerland. In English, the title is Knife Plus Heart, but the movie should be translated as A Knife in the Heart, which for me is a better title. It stars Vanessa Paradis, which maybe you don't know, is the ex-girlfriend of Johnny Depp and mother of Lily Rose Depp. So she's kind of big in France, and that movie was very important in her career because she received a prize for it, for a portrayal. There's also Nicolas Maury, Kate Moran, and Jonathan Genet, which is people you might not know, but they are very important in the new wave of French cinema, especially queer cinema. And the movie also have a great soundtrack by M83, who happened to be the brother of the director. So that does help.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes, it is. So the soundtrack, for me, the soundtrack is one of the highlights of the movie. It's a gorgeous soundtrack.
Yeah, it definitely was. I just didn't know that was his brother.
Mm-hmm. The film was selected to compete for the Palme d'Or at Cannes in 2018. And the lead character is loosely based on a real person called Anne-Marie Tensi, which is, she was a female producer specializing in gay pornography, was active in France in the 70s and 80s. So having that character, which is based on a real person, made it even more interesting. So what's the movie about? Anne produces Third Rate Gay Porn. After her editor and lover, Louise, leave her, she tried to win her back by shooting her most ambitious film yet with a trusted flamboyant sidekick, Archibald. But one of the actors is brutally murdered, and Anne gets caught up in a strange investigation that turns her life upside down. So, I hope that makes you want to watch the movie.
Well, I think for all our true crime fans out there, why don't you tell us more about who it's based on? Like, did they actually kill people?
Okay, no. Okay, so the movie, the genesis of the movie started that way. So it started from a character.
Mm-hmm.
While reading the Dictionary of Pornography by Christopher Beer, which is a real book, you can actually buy it if you want to, he discovered a 1970s female French gay porn director who was passionate, an alcoholic, homosexual, and in love with a film editor. She had a reputation of being harsh, unpredictable, and making her actors do humiliating things during casting session. In short, she was a very colorful character and someone you just want to meet, I guess, or not.
Mm.
So, yes, she was a thing. She definitely was a thing. And the director, together with Hervé Joseph Lebrun, who is a specialist of gay porn in France, they spent time to meet people who had spent time with her. So they talked to all competitors, colleagues, etc. That helped him to bring together a large amount of documentation. But there was something seedy of what he had, and he it wasn't really the direction he wanted to take. On the contrary, he wanted something flamboyant, something romantic. So he decided to reinvent her and turn her into a fictional character. So we got, it's based on a real person, but he kind of molded it into something else because she was silly. She was an awful person, and she also was part of a murder investigation and with the murderer being an accountant. It was very silly, like kind of a mafia thing. So she still wanted to preserve the love story with the editor, as well as half of his first name, as a sort of spiritual secret tribute to this underground heroine, because this person really disappeared. Very few people know about her. She, in the 70s, she'd done roughly hundreds of movies. It was very rare for a woman to be a porn director. And she also had to have a pseudonym, which was a name, a male name. And out of the hundreds of movies she's made, only 10 remain. So she kind of almost disappeared from the face of the earth. She died alone in her apartment with actually no legs because of diabetes. So,
well,
pretty sad ending.
That's fucking sad.
It is sad. But she was actually in the 70s. She actually owned cinemas, porn cinemas in Paris. So she was actually kind of big. Like in the end of the movie, you see her actually in that cinema that she was on in the past.
Well, you mentioned that there were not a lot of female directors in porn back then. It actually makes me wonder how many female directors there are in porn right now. Because, I mean,
I think there's more.
I haven't recalled seeing any, so I was just wondering. I was like, that's something to Google later.
There may be something to Google. I do believe that there's been, like, in the last 5 or 10 years, been more female wanted to do porn movie for female,
mm-hmm.
because they realized it was always a male gaze that was important, and actually started to do porn for women, for female audience. But in the 70s, that didn't happen. And on top of it all, she was doing gay porn. So a female doing gay porn was actually pretty new.
Well, so I feel like that's a good segue into the opening scene.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So opening scene. So what, just describe what you saw, because that opening scene is actually set up everything else in the movie.
I mean, at first I was like, okay, did I actually turn on Pornhub? But yeah, I saw this beautifully shot scene where you know, they were making out. There was a lot of man ass there, a lot of dancing. I was like, okay, this is cute. And then the next thing you know, I see someone getting tied up, and then a knife comes out of a dildo, and I think he gets slammed into his.
He gets fucked to death, basically, with a black dildo with a knife in it. Yes. So this is pretty much why people are saying that this is an homage to Galio. So Galio is something that is very important in that movie. And maybe I should give a little explanation what Galio is.
Yeah, for maybe, listener. Maybe you should.
Galio is really inside that movie. Everything about this movie is Galio. It's an homage to Galio. It sometimes does better than Galio did in the 70s, so that's pretty interesting as well. So a Galio film is a stylish and violent crime thriller hailing from Italy. The gore, creepy visual, and similarities to slasher, often associated with the Galio genre, lend strong connective tissue to the horror genre. Also, the crime and murder mystery plot element found across the genre keep Galio grounded in the whodunit or the thriller genre. When horror superseded the mystery element, Galio often called Italian slashers rather than Italian crime thriller. So the word Galio means yellow in Italian, but the genre doesn't take its name from the color alone, but rather an association, the color old in Italy, which is a series of pulp mystery novels that were sold in the 60s and 70s. There's some debate over the first true Galio film, but A lot of people agree that it was a Mario Bava 1963 movie, The Girls Who Knew Too Much, which have a strong similarity to the Alfred Hitchcock best films, The Man Who Knew Too Much. So there's several rules that is important in Giallo. So the first one, the Giallo always revolve around an whodunit plot, so there's always a mystery. The protagonists are often everyday people endeavoring amateur detective works rather than trained investigative professionals. The brutality and intricacy of the murders is also important. The victims in Giallo are more often than not beautiful women. The focus on female victim is one of the handful of traits the Giallo genre share with the slasher genre. This is the biggest reason why Giallo are sometimes characterized as Italian slashers. The murders are typically shown from the point of view of the killer. Second, all we see of the killer are black gloves, clad hand clutching whatever the implements of death may be. And they are statistically, step on, English is hard, statistically staple of the genre's tactic for keeping the killer's identity a mystery without missing out on any of the gory fun. And a gallery is often a you know it when you see it kind of thing, because it really emphasizes on stylish visual and bright color and cool music. So you can't basically say it's a gallery without seeing it, because really the style, the bright color lighting, music, everything is come together with the brutality of the murders to actually creating this feeling of a gallery. And this very important also is a Giallo can't have supernatural elements. So killer can't be supernatural. The killer always have to be a real person in the end. There might be some supernatural underlining to
okay,
it.
Okay, I thought some of them had like maybe supernatural gifts, like maybe something weird, like they could talk to insects or something to that accord.
That's not the killer. If you talk, okay. You're talking about phenomena, and phenomena is not the killer that speaks to insect, it's actually the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So the killer on its own is actually not supernatural whatsoever. So even though you can have a supernatural feel to it, there is actually the killer always has to be a human. So there you go. So based on the rules I just told you, would you characterize this movie as a giallo?
I mean, I would, and I feel like if you never watched one, this would probably be a nice one to start.
It is. It's. I would say what's interesting, they're using the Giallo rules, and they kind of subvert it in some ways. For example, the victims are all men. That's one thing. The heroine is not actually an heroine. She's a red bitch. Let's be honest. The character of Anne is a really awful person for most of the movies.
And for Giallos, don't they often don't dive too much into like on deep subjects, do they? Like they might bring it up, but they never really explore it too much.
Yeah, they actually they do talk about societal events, but they don't really go deeper into it. And the reason why a lot of Giallo got a bad name, especially in England, is because of the dubbing, which was usually terrible.
Aren't Giallos usually filmed and then dubbed over later with whichever language they want?
It was, but usually they were using third-rate dubbing people, so the dubbing is usually bad. I personally grew up with Giallo because when I was a kid and later on a teenager, we had a channel in France called La 5, number 5. And it was a channel which was Italian channel in French. And on a Saturday night, we had this horror slot when they were showing a lot of Italian horror movies. So I actually grew up with Giallo more than slasher for a very long time. So it's kind of close to my heart in some way, even the bad dubbing.
So I guess for some of our listeners, in your own words, could you describe the difference between a slasher and a Giallo?
Style. For me, it's the style and the music. If we compare this movie with, let's say, the latest slasher around Scream, we actually have some of the setup are very Giallo-like, the haunting by the killer. The killing can be kind of graphic, but the feeling of it is not really like a, it's not like a Giallo. The music is not that important. The style of the image also, because for me, a Giallo, a lot of the Giallos are a very stylish kind of almost comic book like feel to it, with very strong lighting and very strong shadows. The image on its own actually is a big part of what a Giallo is. You can actually take a take the movie and do a freeze frame, and you got a gorgeous image. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot with this movie, and like anytime I would pause it, you could just frame one of the shots.
It was. So, and there's a lot of, this movie is very important in terms of references. There's a huge amount of reference in the movie. There's reference for on De Palma. Brian De Palma is a big influence in that movie. Dario Argento, of course. You also have Belphégor. Belphégor is a serial in the 60s, 50s and 60s in France. It was a murder mystery on TV about a ghost in the Louvre. And the ghost actually wear the same kind of mask you see actually the killer wearing in that movie. So it's, and 79, it's summer 79. It's a very important moment in France, in the world, because it's just before the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. So we still have this gay, LGBT kind of underground society still free to do their things, despite the fact they're still being looked at freaks in society. In 1979 in France, you were pretty much getting a file on you if you were homosexual. So it was pretty, pretty bad. This is a reason why the police are not doing anything during the entire movie. There's a killer, but the killer actually killed gay people. So it's not a priority for the police. This explains it, basically.
Yeah. And when, because there was this, I think there was one scene where they just said that they don't care about us. And I was like, doesn't this take place during the AIDS epidemic around that time? So that's what I was thinking
1979.
Of. 1979. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It was just before.
Yeah.
But it's actually the, you can actually look at this movie and actually see it as a representation of the AIDS epidemic, especially toward the end. We're going to go back, when we talk about the ending, actually, we can go back into that subject. But there is a strong symbolism by the AIDS epidemic in that movie.
Yeah, I noticed. So, I mean, I noticed it was brought up, but it was kind of just like, I noticed this a lot in the movie, is that there were a lot of things that were brought up, and then they were just kind of like, cool, you know, they don't really explain anything for you. And I guess that's the point of a Giallo, right? Like, they don't explain it for
it
you.
It is. Yeah. And what is special about this movie, it's, foremost, it's a love story. In some way, the murders, the mystery, take a back seat for a very long time, because we're looking at this destruction of this lesbian relationship between Lois and Anne. Anne being actually an alcoholic, being pretty abusive towards her partner, which culminated with sexual assault. Something that we rarely see in movies, actually two females going through a sexual assault.
Yeah.
And that was pretty strong to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if the translation was correct, but I think what she said on the phone, when she says, "My heart has gone dry," I was like, damn.
She actually said that. What you have to actually understand about the character is very manipulative. She's a manipulatrice. She manipulates people. You can see for the entire movie. Like, for example, she got one of the actors dies, get killed violently. What does she do? after being interrogated by the police. She just created, she just changed a porn movie to actually make it about a killer that killed gay people. She's actually using the experience she had in this murder investigation to create a porn movie. While one of her actors had been killed violently, she doesn't care. She just keeps doing them.
Yeah, that's what one thing I noticed about this when she started doing that, when she started basically using the murders as, I guess, inspiration. I was like, our queen is very problematic.
She is. And she's also the reason, she's also, spoiler alert, the reason why there's a killer in the first place.
Yeah.
If, but I find it, the film is rather funny at times, especially the entire porn setup. You can see from time to time, you see them filming the movies, and actually the porn setup are hilarious. You first see the seriousness of the scene when she's at the police. And then she actually got the same scene with a transvestite actually being pretty much raped by the policeman inside the police station.
Yeah, that one. The scene, that scene where they were like, I think, what, masturbating?
And yeah, they were masturbating, yes.
I was like, what?
It's very important because you see she's making a joke of a very serious situation. It seems that she doesn't care that actually that person died.
Yeah.
And you see in the back there's a character of Golden Mouth. I don't know if it's called Golden Mouth in English. That character that is there only to give blowjobs to the actors that can't get it up.
Oh yeah, and then when he asked him how much she was paying him, he was like, nothing. I live with my mom. I was like,
but this character, actually, you see that scene in that scene they're recreating in a police station when they're masturbating onto the desk, and he actually, you see him being really sad because he realizes that she doesn't care about the fact that Carl, which is the name of the first victim, got murdered.
Yeah, that there are definitely some parts in this movie where I was kind of like, what is going on? Like, I think there was also a scene where the drag queen gave birth to a bottle of vodka. I was like, I do enjoy that.
Well, the movie is all about family because these people are families, and there's a family unit with Anne being the mother in some way, and all the people revolve around her. And so you really have this sense also of kind of a dreamlike. It's kind of dreamlike at times. I don't know if you realize that, if you felt that.
Oh, definitely.
You feel really dreamlike.
Definitely, I can definitely feel that. But one thing I found interesting is you just never really knew whose dream it was. Sometimes, and that's one thing that I realized about the movie, is that it was almost kind of psychic at sometimes, where it felt like it knew who you thought the killer was, but then it threw you off completely every time. Like, every scene, it's like, I know you know who you think the killer is, but that's not the killer. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, they actually, the movie is very clever on that, where they know exactly what the viewer think,
yeah,
and always subvert the expectation of the till the end, basically till the end of the movie. There's a lot of symbolism of the birds. This gorgeous image of these birds are actually these blind birds, were supposed to be helping people through death and remove death and actually help people. And for me, that was a gorgeous image of that black bird, which this blind bird always appear when one victim's gonna die.
Yeah.
And that was gorgeous.
And let's talk about some of the kills. I mean, they're pretty unique.
Well, there's another, well, give you another idea of deep throating, that's for sure.
Oh, the yeah, definitely the blowjob one where the dildo and the knife goes through the back of their head. What was one of your favorite kills?
I'm gonna be honest with you, I love the it was not the most bloody kill, but it was for me one of the kill that was the most impactful is a kill in the forest with a transsexual that
Oh yeah.
actually the psychic transsexual who died for it's such a sad actually death, but it's beautiful at the same time. It's just where it felt like a ballet. It felt like it was a dance. The camera was dancing with the killer, and you just saw the killer coming slowly when the camera was turning, like in a storm, and just died there and left alone on the floor. It was such a sad kill.
I know. I mean, I really went into this movie with like no expectations because you told me it was nothing I would expect, but I was like, joke's on you, I don't have any expectations. And I noticed that at first it started out like, okay, this is a little gory, you know, there's gonna be a lot of kills. But then towards, or I guess around the second act, it was really sad, you
A drama.
know.
It's actually people. If I said to you, it's a Galio. It's not. It's a Galio without being one.
Yeah.
It's actually really based on actually. It's a very sad love story, and actually there's even the killer backstory that we're going to be talking about at the end. It's a sad story. It's a really. It's all about sad people. In some way. There's not much kill. There's one, two, three. I think there's four kills for the entire movie.
Yeah. We also can't forget about our DL guy at the beginning who is working in the fields. And you know, when she says that she's going to incorporate common people into, you know, her films, and she gives him her card, and she's like, I guess you want to hear me say it myself from a woman's lips. I was like, calm down, girly. And she's like telling him that he can do gay porn, and he's like, I'm not a fairy. I was like,
But with the right price.
yeah.
I
She's like, I thought you were more progressive than that. I mean, what's the most you got to lose? All you get is pleasure either way and experience. So I was like, it didn't take that much persuasion.
No, about the prices as well. It was actually, I think she was offering him 600 a scene.
Yes. What?
And which is different because when they made a prostitute, they actually proposed to them 200 a scene. Don't know if you realize that.
No, I didn't.
No.
No. Does this movie take place in Paris? Is it Paris?
It takes place in Paris,
Okay.
yes. It's in the city on the belly of Paris.
How is the underbelly now? Is it still the same?
I don't know. I'm not in Paris, as you know. I'm actually in the civilized part of France.
Oh, shade.
Not really, but I'm actually in different regions. So I don't really like Paris, as you know. We talked about it in length. The movie is mostly spent, is mostly during nighttime as well. We see a lot of things at night. The club scene is a gorgeous scene. I found the music was actually the dancing and everything else. Once she realized that a girlfriend is with someone else,
Yeah, that was sad.
and she actually and she decided to edge. The only way she can actually talk to her ex-girlfriend is to edge a message onto the film that she's editing. When she put, "You've killed me," which is weird because she actually done it on the image of the person that got killed on that night. So actually, that was oops.
She's so problematic.
She was really problematic. She's an alcoholic. She was violent. She was really awful, awful person.
Yeah, and but at the same time, she was a riot. I was like, she is funny.
She was tragic. She was a tragic character who actually obviously loved that woman. And after 10 years of relationship, became so abusive that there was nothing there, but she just wanted to keep it alive. And going up to actually doing a sexual assault on a girlfriend. And that was that scene, reading some interview, that scene was one of the most difficult scene that the two actresses asked to play. Because both of them really respect each other, and it was very hard for them to actually do that scene, because one, it's not a scene you see all the time. I never seen any sexual assault between two women in movies before.
No, and when it comes between sexual assault and men, I think the one that made me uncomfortable was that episode of Slasher. Do you know which one I'm talking about? On the bus, on the school bus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, oh. So seeing it with two women for the first time in like a film, it was sad, hard watch.
It was hard and it was sad because you realize there's a reason why Vanessa Paradis got a prize for acting, because after she sexually assaulted her ex-girlfriend, the face she has in her eyes, you feel the pain that she messed up. She was drunk, she's done that, and she regretted so much. Because at that moment, it's that moment that actually killed the love between the two characters.
Yeah.
And it's such a sad scene. So now let's talk a bit about the investigation. Hold on, we have time still or not? Oh, we got 4 minutes. Shall we?
Yeah.
So now as we talked about earlier on, Galio is also an whodunit, so a murder mystery. So let's talk a bit about the investigation and the journey Anne has with that investigation. So very early on in the movie, we just realized the police don't want to do anything. The people being killed are outcast of society. So Anne kind of want to investigate on her own about what's happening, or maybe not. Beginning, she doesn't care, but just she starts to investigate. This is one thing about the movie that I found a bit hard to actually understand, is to switch between a character when she actually doesn't care and the moment where actually she starts to investigate. I believe personally is due to the fact she's losing money because nobody wants to work with her anymore, because everyone that actually worked with her get killed. So
of course, money's the greatest motivator.
So she starts to investigate actually about the murderers and actually what happened and why people are being killed and people who are related to her and the movies. And we've got one of the policemen who gave her this feather they found next to both murders. Feather of that bird, that actually kind of a mythical bird in some way. Very rare bird. It's a bird who is blind. Blackbird, can't see. What did you think about that symbolism of the bird?
Well, I actually didn't understand the symbolism. So I kept seeing the bird, but I just never correlated, you know, the two together. So thank you for explaining
it. Well, you actually they explained it pretty well when she go to this bird specialist and actually start to explain that the bird had this magical power. People believe this bird had magical power that helps sick people getting better. There was this very weird scene actually when that guy explaining about it had a bird-like hand. I don't know if you realize that. It was pretty weird.
Yes, I definitely remember that. I actually wrote that down because I was like, what the?
But this is actually what Galio is about style. And actually, we've got this very weird character related to bird, and you could think, oh, maybe that person could be the killer because we go see a bird all the time, and he actually got bird hands, so could he be the killer? But no, it's not the killer, of course. And then she actually, when she go to the countryside to go to that forest that the bird specialist talked about, he said that a bird can only be found in that forest, and she decided to go to that forest. And there she meet that woman in the hotel, in the bed and breakfast. And that woman might not be important in the plot, but it's important in the characters. Because you have two women, obviously lesbians. One of them escape society view and actually become what she wanted to be. And the other one decide to stay with her father. So she abandoned her life as a lesbian to actually stay with her father, and she lived alone, being an alcoholic, like actually the character, the main character also. So you have these two characters talking with each other, and they just realize that they're the same people in some way, but people with actually a different choices in life. I find that very interesting. Because I did meet a lot of people who had chosen family over their own life for a very long time, and I recognized really that woman. I really recognized people that knew done that choices. So that was interesting. So when she is in the forest, she discovered this graveyard in the middle of the forest, and that's when we start to have some idea of what's going on. We are talking about these two kids who got killed in the barn fire, and they only found one person body, and the other person disappeared, which is correlating with what we see, this kind of memories we see in negative about someone running out of a barn on fire.
Yes, that's when I started putting two and two together as well. That's when they started to bring it home.
And if we actually, if you remember, these images were actually pretty disjointed until you realize that the real story of it is it was two young guys who fell in love with each other, who met each other. The dad found out, decided to cut the dick off his son,
Yes.
kill the lover and actually burn the barn, trying to actually hide the body. Out of fact that actually he killed those people. And of course, the son was not dead. He actually managed to escape and end up being the killer.
As they always manage to escape. Yeah. I was not expecting him to be the killer, so it surprised me, so yeah.
Which also would actually make sense about the use of that weapon.
Yes, it like when I realized it was him, I was like, oh.
He couldn't do it. He actually, the killer was the sex on its own. And we got a lot of scene, which is for me really brought home about everything. Was about all the characters were really tragic characters. I don't think any of the characters in that movie were actually good characters. Don't know if you realize that.
Do you think they weren't any redeeming characters, or do you think they were
Oh,
just all
there was
okay?
redeeming, but also mean that every characters actually had were hurt. There was
Yeah.
actually like if you look at American Slasher, you always have the Joker. You got all of the comic relief and everything else. There was none of that in that movie. The movie was rather bleak from the answers. The answer length of the movie is really, really bleak. The character
Yes.
was maybe Archibald was the only one that actually kind of stayed sticking. I don't want to say positive, but was not that flawed. Actually, maybe it's also the comic relief because playing the director, the character with the brown wig is pretty hilarious.
I did find it pretty hilarious. So about that, you specifically told me to make sure that I watched even the credits. So why don't you talk about that scene at the end where they were all in white and
Okay, so first of all, we need to talk about that scene in the Gaepon cinema because that's a very important scene in the movie when we actually discover that the reason why the killer has been killing these people is because these people were part of that movie called Of Sperm and Fresh Water. Great title, I must say, which was a sci-fi porn movie about people in the future living more simply. And this movie just portrayed the story of the killer, but actually with a different ending. And actually, that explained why the killer got really actually annoyed and started to kill the people that were all related to that movie, because the director done exactly what she's done at the beginning of the movie, which was using someone's tragic story to make money.
Why is it they're always so problematic, but you can't help but love
But so this is actually
them?
the key of that movie is that the key of the movie is that woman is responsible for all the death because she doesn't take someone tragic experience into account. She just see it as a money making machines. So the killer is in that cinema. He killed Lois. He killed
The love of her life.
the love of her life in a scene which was really cool. I really found it really cool. The new movie actually and the way she's got killed. And the standoff happened in a gay porn cinema. And the killer is unmasked, and that killer is someone we've never seen in the movie, but it doesn't really matter. It's a nobody who just get killed by gay people in the cinema. He actually get murdered himself, but actually gay people coming together.
They're like, you think you can just kill us almost?
Which is also, that's what I want to say to you is actually there is a big correlation between the HIV epidemic, because the epidemic, society didn't care because it was just gay people being killed. And the only people who started to fight this were actually gay people. So the killer in a way could be actually seen as a symbol for HIV. Killed by sex and actually, only touching the gay community at the beginning, and the only people that managed to actually stop it was gay people themselves, because the state didn't care. That's the symbol I'm seeing, and I stick to it.
I can see that. Like after you said that, I was like, yeah, I can see that.
For me, it's. When we see the period of the movie, I think that actually is pretty fitting with actually what the movie was about. And to go back to the ending, like the white scene, well, the white scene is pretty much all of them coming together. The killer is dead. They're having sex. They're having an orgy.
Yeah, I know. I was like, the credits started playing. I was like, okay, well, I guess that's it. Then the next thing I know, there was like a whole orgy. I was like, okay, the movie's not over.
There's an orgy. There's actually like maybe the redeeming moment for that character, the main character, when she actually make peace with the ghost of her lover at the end. The white is a dream. It's really a dream. It's actually like that white place. It's pretty much a dream. It's maybe what she would like is actually people loving each other. with no problem and everything else. And we know that what happened is actually not the case in real life. The 80s and 90s was terrible for gay people. So, but this is what she wanted after the death of that killer. It's kind of bittersweet. It's gorgeous and it's bittersweet at the same time. But you've got a lot of asses. So if guys, you actually want to see male asses, you're going to see it in that movie because there's plenty of them. That's for sure. That's something you don't shy away from. But overall, this movie was gorgeous. And there's little thing like I'm planning most probably to talk about another French movie in the near future. And is directed by the guy who played the director in the movie, the guy with the long hair, and who is actually the cameraman in the movie.
Oh, yes. Basically the only comic relief, yeah.
Well, the cameraman in the movie is actually the director of another movie I want to actually talk about eventually. It was called Les Enfants Sauvages. Which got the same kind of style of this one. It is actually very based on stylish and a lot of gorgeous images. We're going to talk about it in the near future. So overall, so you experienced that movie, Un couteau dans le cœur. So what is your final thought about that movie?
My final thoughts or just my score in general?
You can do score and final thoughts. You can...
I want to give it 7 crystals out of 10.
Okay.
There was a lot that I liked about it. Oddly, though, I feel like it should have been longer. I feel like it left me kind of wanting more of it, if that makes sense. I was like, I kind of want a little bit more. But, all in all, I enjoyed it. So what about you?
For me, I would give it 7 as well. It's a movie I love stylistically. I found this movie gorgeous. The story, I love the story of it. The soundtrack is part of my playlist I listen to when I work. So yeah, I love that soundtrack. It's beautiful. It's sad. It adds something to the horror genre, which is emotion and actually drama, something that we really don't have in a lot of slasher or giallo. Actually, it's all about the murders and less about the emotion. Every character in the movie are nice. I don't think that any of the secondary characters were just there as cannon fodder. Even the transsexual we meet that gets killed inside in a forest, she actually make me feel sad. She really make me feel sad because it was such a tragic character. We're talking about you need to let yourself go. You need to actually let your monster not consume you. And actually, you got so much stuff in you. You need to actually know to let go. And she get killed. It was so dramatic, so sad. If there's one thing maybe I wish, maybe that it was longer, I agree. I felt so the mystery could have been better explained because a lot of things was not said. It was a lot of, you need to really think later on to understand everything in the movie. Sometimes it's over-referenced. There's a lot of reference in this movie, and personally, I enjoyed it because I know a lot of these references because I grew up with them. So I can actually see, like, oh, this is from that. This is from Dress to Kill. This is from this song. This is from Belphegor. But someone who might not be really into European cinema might not actually see a lot of these references, which is a shame because it really adds to the movie. And and I wish that there would be not so much disconnect between this kind of dreamlike sequences and actually the real world sequences. I would have it to be more smoothly the cut between them. But overall, I would recommend it to people, but people need to be really open-minded because there's some scene that can be a bit weird for people to watch if they are not used to this. It's European movies, so there's sex.
Basically, if you're conservative, you might want to skip this.
Yeah. Would be a shame to skip it, though, because the story is really good. And it's a very nice addition to Aura. Unfortunately, is might not have worked that much because the director haven't done any movies since. Which is such a shame, because when you see what he's done there, you're just like, well, I want something more from him. But he hasn't done anything since. And it's a shame because I found that the marriage between the music and his images is amazing. It's perfect. It's just perfect.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess that wraps up our episode for this week. And 2 weeks... it's time I'm going to be showing David a little something that's probably going to make him uncomfortable.
Oh, okay. That's exciting. That would be interesting to see.
Yeah, so I guess you'll just have to tune in to find out what that is.
Oh, I'm scared.
But I'll give you a hint. It's from a director that has made some pretty... it's mind-boggling horror movies that have been very big in pop culture in the last couple of years. We'll just say that it was okay. One of his first works, so
okay. I wonder if it doesn't start with W and finish with a C, director's name.
You'll just have to find out.
Okay. So Anthony, it's time to wrap up then for today. And I hope you enjoy a little more talk about these European movies. And we'll see you next time.